Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you with a special bonus episode with a special guest. Yeah. We have Dr. Wilfred Nagel himself, Ole Haskevy. Ole, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
Oh, so good. So this is a big deal, being on a Marvel show. I'm not sure if you're aware.
Yeah, do you know what's going on? It's great.
The answer is I don't really know what's going on. I mean, I'm only becoming aware of what a big deal is.
Well, wow. So talk about this a little bit, because the Marvel actors always like to go on talk shows and say, oh, we can't talk about what's going on. There's so much secrecy about it. You're coming in as this guest character for this episode. What is the secrecy level like for that? Is it more? Is it less? Is it about the same?
It's probably a little bit more. I mean, I don't imagine that, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, even thinking back to the audition, when I got the audition, it was not for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It was for something called Untitled Marvel Number 4.
Wow.
I don't know that was the exact number. So, you know, maybe someone will write in and say that I'm wrong about that. But so from the drop, I mean, it was incredibly secretive. The audition scene was a version of what you see in the show, but with all the specific details taken out, names were changed. Wow. And then I got the job and still didn't know what the job was. And I assumed, as soon as I got the job, I Googled to, you know, see what Marvel things were happening, which things were in production. And I assumed that it was WandaVision, because Matt Shakman, who directed WandaVision, he runs the Geffen Playhouse in Los Angeles. And over the years, I do a lot of theater, and over the years, I've almost done a couple plays there. And so my brain immediately assumed, oh, I auditioned for his show, my tape crossed his desk, and he went, oh, I know who that guy is. Yeah, fine. And it wasn't until I got my official script pages a couple days later that I responded to whoever said the pages. And I just said, can you tell me what show this is? Can you tell me anything about any of this? And they sent a very nice email back that said, you know, it's the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, right?
Exactly. No, I can't tell you.
Thank you for your interest, but no. They sent back a very nice email that said, you know, this is the title, this is the code name, it's being directed by Kari Skoglund. That's when I got the rundown, but it was not immediate. And so the whole thing from the very beginning was shrouded in a lot of mystery.
It's so crazy because it's like you hear these actors talk and it's almost like they get bagged and tagged and they wake up on set and then they're like, read this, and it's all redacted. Like, is it hard to act when you don't really have any kind of like ground to be like, oh, okay, I understand what's happening or where I am?
I mean, I think that luckily in this particular scenario, that scene, the Dr. Wilfred Nagel sequence, the actual text of that did tell me everything I needed to know.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, and he does a good job of saying, hey, here's who I am and here's what I've been up to lately. It's a good check-in.
Totally. And I also think that, you know, so much of being an actor is just deciding that whatever is happening is what should be happening. And so if I get a full script with a ton, and, you know, every once in a while on a certain kind of project, they'll send a research packet or they'll send references, and you sort of go, oh, great, I'll dig into all of that. And then sometimes you get no information and you go, okay, this is what I got and I'll do the best I can. And there is something a little freeing about that, actually, not having to sort of hold the entire scope of it in.
Yeah.
Your work. And I also trust it. I mean, the people that work on this show are so extraordinary on so many levels that I did feel like I could trust that if I needed to know something, or if I had, you know, if there were holes in my work in some way and someone needed to say, you know, this is actually about this and this and this, I trusted that between all of those wonderful people, someone would tell me what was going on.
I think we need to get a supercut of all of the fake audition scenes that all of the actors and all the shows. So whatever, like, you're auditioning for a romantic comedy set in space, and it's suddenly it's like, no, I'm in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, I want to see that show.
And you know what's also really funny is that when I auditioned for it, the role didn't have a name, obviously, and it just said Doctor. Mm-hmm. And so my audition tape is me looking pretty spiffy. Like, I'm wearing a button-down shirt and glasses, and I'm pretty well put together because I saw, you know, he's a doctor. And I've played plenty of doctors on television. I know how it goes. And I think it speaks to how wonderful those people are, actually, that they saw something in that tape and went, that's the person we want, and we can envision what that would be, looking a little different, feeling a little different. Not everyone has that much imagination.
Yeah. Well, they looked at you and they're like, take his hair and go like this.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, you touched on this a little bit earlier, but I feel like it's relatively rare to have a guest actor who comes in essentially for one scene and then you get a meaty monologue like that. What was that experience like, coming on set and then being like, all right, I'm going to just lay all this information out to everybody?
Sure. You know, I mean, I've done a pretty good amount of that in other jobs. I feel like I'm often saddled with a good amount of exposition and jargon and all of these things. I was definitely a little intimidated by it. I didn't have the real script pages for that long before we shot. I probably had them for 5 or 6 days, but not that long. Uh-huh. And we shot for, we actually shot that sequence for 3 or 4 days all told.
Oh, wow.
Which felt like a real luxury because a lot of other TV shows and films would sort of go, it's one location, we'll just slam through it in a day.
Yeah.
It's truly. And, I will say, I mean, this is bragging slightly, but we did finish a day early because we all were on top of it, which felt really good.
Day early.
It felt really nice to go, oh, this was budgeted on the schedule for X amount of days, and look at us now. but there was a lot of me, you know, one thing that is helpful for my memorization, for whatever reason, is to physicalize it as I'm memorizing it. I think because then your body is doing two things at once. For some reason, that sinks in deeper for me. So there was a lot of me walking around my hotel, holding my script pages and just like quietly mumbling to myself these speeches. Because I mean, the biggest thing, like you said, about being a guest star is that you really don't want to feel like you're dropping the ball. You're well aware that you're coming into something. It's sort of like trying to like jump on a moving train as fast as you can and not attract any attention and not be the reason that there's a train, an unexpected stop or something. But and I did sort of.
Your character then threw a grenade over his shoulder and jumped off the train as well. So
both sides. And you know, the last thing you want to be thinking about while you're acting is what are the lines. And so I definitely remember getting the actual script and going, oh, wow, okay, I have my work cut out for me here. But also how wonderful. I mean, that's such a great opportunity.
Given that Dr. Wilfernagel is a character from the comics, he's from Truth, Red, White, and Black, once you finally did find out who the character was, did you go back and look at that at all? Or since he's relatively so different, did it not really matter?
I definitely did look. But like you said, as soon as I saw what he looked like, frankly, and that he looks not a thing like me in any conceivable way, I sort of felt like that gave me the freedom to go, okay, we're clearly doing something different with this character here. And I don't know a ton about the MCU, and I definitely didn't know before I had the job, but I did know enough to know that the films and television shows are not literal translations of the exact comic books. I mean, had I looked at the comic book and seen, you know, someone who's like tall and slim and 33 years old with glasses, maybe I would have gone, okay, I need to pay attention to how does he stand and all of those kinds of things. But I pretty immediately went, oh, okay, so we're doing something different here. And I think that really freed me up to feel like I could use the script that I had and use all the clues there to come up with something that was interesting to me.
Now, the character is picking up from Stanley Tucci's Abraham Erskine back from Captain America, the First Avenger. Since you're saying you can do a better formula than him in the show, do you think you could do a better Negroni than Stanley Tucci?
Wow.
No one can do anything. That is a hard question, but the answer is simple, that I really do feel like no one can do anything better than Stanley Tucci can. I really did feel incredibly honored and sort of blown away when, again, I didn't know a ton heading into this. And so it wasn't until I had been on set for a couple of days that Eli, this PA, was walking me to the set to shoot. And he said, you know, it's a really big deal that you're the guy who's playing this part.
Why is he saying that?
I really don't know. Well, it was so sweet. It was really nice. I appreciated it. But he did say, he was like, well, you're the next, you know, mad scientist or whatever you would want to say after Stanley Tucci's mad scientist. And I sort of felt like, oh, wow, that's mention me in any sentence with Stanley Tucci. I think he's extraordinary.
See, I feel like you could make a better Negroni, but it wouldn't be a 100% sexual experience like it is when Stanley Tucci is literally just mixing.
Who knows?
That's true.
We have a surprise delivery coming your way. We're going to have you do a Negroni live on the podcast.
Yeah.
I hope I get to just meet him somewhere someday or shoot something with him at some point.
I got to think there needs to be that sort of MCU party where it's like, hey, where are the mad scientists? We'll be over here by the hummus. Have all the space gods over here.
He's a hero.
Just to take a little bit of a step back and talk about that set again, because it is there for a very brief period of time, but that container set, that lab that he has is so cool. What was it like walking onto that for the first day?
It was wild. I'm sure there is a budget for these shows, but it certainly doesn't feel like there is. I mean, it feels like no expense is spared in making these sets and these costumes that are so detailed and so rich. And that adds to your performance, obviously, because you go, okay, if this is this person's lab and it's this sort of sprawling and intricate and all of that, you know, what does that say about the character? And I was really stunned by it. And that's another funny thing about being a guest actor on something is that you don't know what any of those things will look like usually until you're there. I mean, I remember starting to shoot The Deuce and getting onto the set and just going, this is not at all what I envisioned. My office to look like. And that was, for whatever reason, that was a real impediment to me that day to just like adjust my mind to what, especially when it's something like your office or your home, like something that a character would spend a ton of time in.
Yeah. And you sort of have to do that visual work in general to get to into the character. So then all of a sudden you're like, this is not where I am here.
Yeah. And again, just in the moment, I think part of the skill is being able to go, okay, that's not what I thought, but how can we work with this?
You find the one object that does resonate and you're like, that's the thing and something like
totally.
That.
Totally. And I mean, my experience on that set is just that the whole thing just sort of feels like a playground or something. Right. I mean, it is movie magic to the 900th power. And so, I mean, it did sort of have the feeling of, you know, the kind of thing you might imagine when you were a kid with these gigantic blue screens. I mean, I watched them film some of the shipping container stuff going into the lab and some of the fighting stuff. And I mean, that shipyard set was, you know, the size of a football field or something. And a lot of the shooting you do when you're an actor, especially a sort of, you know, an actor in New York City who does the kinds of things that are available there, a lot of that is, you know, trying to steal a shot on the subway before the police show up or something. And so, yeah, it was, I was really blown away stepping onto those sets, the work that those people do is mind blowing to me.
I feel like in one of your speeches, you talk about the blip interrupting the work that your mm-hmm. character is doing. I feel like that has become, that really hit me because of coronavirus as mm-hmm. like, oh man, how does it feel doing that and having that resonance going forward?
I mean, I shot that pre-coronavirus.
That's what I figured.
And so, yeah, and so it has crossed my mind a couple of times recently. You know, I wonder if my performance would be richer now.
Yeah, having definitely had, is. Yeah.
I don't have to imagine the experience anymore. None of us do, unfortunately, yeah. of, you know, being trapped in one location yeah. for a really long time trying to stay alive. And yeah, it is funny to think about that now, but
at the moment, the post-COVID performance is you hard look it down the lens, like, I can't believe we've been gone all this time.
Right. Or like looking at the lens being like, we all know what that
is. Yeah. Yeah. You guys get it.
It's a metaphor.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you're aware, but your character dies at the end of the episode. I hope that's not too much of a shock.
So harsh for you to be the one to tell him.
And I mean, that's what's amazing. If the gunshot didn't kill him, the explosion certainly right. did. Yeah. I mean, we've got a lot going on in that.
Yeah. Well, what's that like, though? Because you get this role, you get a chance to be in the MCU, in the Marvel Universe, and then they're like, great. And then by the end of the scene, you're shot, you're dead, you're blown up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and this might sound like a sort of like rosy Pollyanna answer or something, but I think I was just thrilled to be there ever. Yeah, and
that's the way.
And also my first thought was, oh God, I don't love guns and I don't love fire. And so how are we gonna, am I just gonna be terrified on set the whole time? Oh, wow. I was not, because I mean, the safety on that set is top notch, and they made me feel so comfortable. And but I think that was the technicalities of it were where my brain was at. But you know, I also know, you know, is anyone really dead in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
And though it does seem that guns and fire are your character's weakness.
Maybe, but I also feel like, and you know, maybe this is just the actor begging for a job or something, but I feel like, you know, if anyone could have come up with a way to
true
right. come back after that, Dr. Wilfred Nagel.
Yeah, let's hope so.
I mean, he could have injected himself with the super soldier serum. There could have been a back way out of the shipping container. There's possibilities.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Who can say?
Who can say? Before we let you go, what else do you have going on? Anything else you want to plug in particular, since I know you've balanced a bunch of different roles?
Yeah. This is sort of the last thing on the docket in terms of things to come out. I did an episode. It's really funny. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier was sort of my last big job before the shutdown. And then during the shutdown, I did an episode of Social Distance, the Jenji Kohan series on Netflix, that I shot downstairs in my family's living room. And it was funny to feel like going from the biggest possible thing you could imagine to me being the camera operator and the sound person and the lighting person and trying to act in this thing. And which is really, I mean, that's so much of what I love about this, is trying to have as wide a range of experiences as you possibly can. But I think that series is really beautiful. And I think the episode that I did, it's an anthology series. And so every episode is a whole different story. And the episode that I did, I got to be with Oscar Nunez and Daphne Ruben Vega and Guillermo Diaz and Miguel Sandoval and this like unbelievable cast. And if people are in the mood for something different, that's there for them. I'm really, really proud that I got to be a part of that one.
Awesome. Oli, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
So nice.
Love the role. Love the episode.
Thank you.
For all of you listening out there, if you'd like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen at Marvel Vision Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. Until next time. time, Marvel you later.